What's up, everyone? This week on the pod, we are talking hardcore, like always. But first off, there's some shows coming up this weekend. So on Friday, September 17th, if you live in Southern California, Take Offense, Dead Heat, Section Hate, Headcount, and Exile are playing at the Side Yard Barbecue, 1735 National Avenue. Go to the Take Offense Instagram to get all the info on that. Also, on Saturday, September 18th, Oxnard, California, you know what's up. It is the return of Hometown Kings, Dead Heat, playing the OPAC with my band, Retaliate. So come, say what's up. Also, Legends, Stalag 13, and it's Joe Rivas' 50th birthday party. You got to come say what's up to Episode 1, the legend Joe Rivas. His band, Out of Trust, is playing as well. And also helping out, Hiding Inside Victims and Terena and the Bad Ones. And that's ones with a Z. So you know what's up. Please support the podcast by subscribing to it wherever you listen to it. Also, check out the website, 185milesouth.com. There is a playlist link there, and there is a playlist for every episode. So click that and check out the music that we talk about every week. Also, if you want to go the extra mile to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/185milesouth. The Patreons are the people that keep this podcast alive. There's bonus episodes every month, and I love all these people to a person. But first off, we're going to kick off the show with the mighty Marshall from the Warriors. He's handling business on Vocal Test Karaoke. Let's do this.
Vocal Test Karaoke.
Miles South, a hardcore punk rock podcast.
Introducing first, the challenger, fighting out of the hard corner. Originally from Cleveland, Ohio, he now makes Boston his home. You can plead your case, but you're going home blood red. He is here tonight for victory through harmony. It is the man known as Clevo! And his opponent, fighting out of the core corner, from parts unknown. Weight unknown. Reason he didn't pick Minor Threat in the Straight Edge Super 7, unknown. It is the reigning, defending, undisputed 185 Miles South Trivia Champion of the World, Daniel, these questions are too easy, Sant!
All right, and for the first question, we go to Clevo. Clevo, true or false? Dagnasty, Can I Say, and Cro-Mags Age of Coral came out in the same year.
That is true.
A point to Clevo. How about that? Kicking it off right. All right, Daniel, we go to you. Dan, what is the meaning of life?
42.
We're going to have to send it to Stu.
I just think VD rules, dude.
All right, we're not going to accept it, but we will give you a backup question. Dan,
isn't that the answer in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? What is the meaning of life and everything? And the answer is 42.
You're correct. Respect on reading. Shout out. All right. We go to Dan for his first real question. Dan, true or false? Cro-Mags have more studio albums than Exploited have live albums.
Now we're getting into the God, you know, like some of the nether regions of those later studio albums versus those later live albums. Like, they come around all the time. I'm going to have to say, oh God, I'm going to have to say the Exploited have more live albums.
So that would be
false.
All right. Point to Daniel. Right on. Cro-Mags have 6 studio albums that are billed as Cro-Mags. So, for example, the last Harley Flanagan album that is titled Cro-Mags is not counted. So 6 Cro-Mags albums and Exploited have 7 live albums. How about that?
I bet you they have even more.
Well, Bedge did the counting, and I believe in Bedge, don't you?
Yes.
I believe in Discogs.
Well, that's dubious at best.
That's rough. Anyway, all right.
Anything that's crowdsourced has many landmines in there.
That's true. All right, we go to Clevo for question number 2. Another Cro-Mags one. What am I doing here? Okay. All right, Clevo. Cro-Mags' Don't Tread on Me and a song by Youth of Today both refer to this phrase, which means act of betrayal.
Stabbing the back.
A point to Clevo. All right, we go back to Dan for his question number 2. Dan, according to the DYS song, Sound of Our Town, what breed of dog was born to fight?
A Boston Terrier.
A point to the champ. How about that?
And I really don't think Michael Vick was unleashing a gang of Boston Terriers on people.
Well, have you ever seen a Boston Terrier on Adderall?
Is that what he did? He fed dogs Adderall?
No, I don't know. I can't follow that stuff.
Yeah,
it's too horrible. Heartbreaking. Animals right, people. What the fuck? All right, let's go to Clevo for round number 3. Clevo, this New Jersey straight edge band is named after a mosh move and put out the LP Fast Times of the Jersey Shore in 1998 on Equal Vision Records.
Before you answer, Clevo, are you offended by the easiness of that question?
I'm offended that if I got that wrong in any way, shape, or form, I don't know what I'd have to do. That me getting this wrong would be worse than me not winning the Cleveland Super 7 playlist. I'd actually have to gift my gold 7-inch. That would be a floor
to
punch
me, to
record
me.
On gold.
All right, so, well, yeah. Time's up, and we go to Daniel for the steal.
That would be floor punch.
Point to Cleveland. Floor punch is the correct answer. And, dude, it's fun. These are fun facts for the people, man. You know, we're just giving out hardcore facts. Not everyone knows everything about floor punch, so what's up?
True, but they know that.
Well, everyone's gotten the correct answer so far, so we're right on pace. Dan, we can let Cleveland – or Cleveland.
I love that it's very, like, proper.
My Cleveland. Proper name.
All right. We'll see what Mr. Cleveland thinks about this question that you're going to get. Dan, according to the Foreskins, how many laws are there for them?
There's only one law for them and another one for us.
Oh, and an extra bonus point to the camp. Nope, just 1 point. All right. We go to round number 4. Clevo, this New York band whose first LP... Okay. I phrase this fucking weird because I'm stupid. Okay.
Well, good.
You're going to say the name of the band. I'm going to explain it right now. It's like written like a Jeopardy question, but you don't have to say what is. All right. New York band whose first LP was An Adjustment to Society. also a critical ingredient on a Reuben sandwich?
That would be kraut.
A point to Clevo. We've had no misses so far, which means maybe I'm the guy that's missing. All right, Dan, round four. Discord Records number 8.5 is a 7-inch by Iron Cross. What is the name of that 7-inch?
Jesus. Crucified?
We go to Clevo for the possible steal. Clevo. I'll say the question and then you can say. Okay. Discord Records number 8.5 is a 7-inch by Iron Cross. What is the name of that 7-inch?
That would be Skinhead Glory.
A point to Clevo. And Dan, hang up your boots. Hang up your boots. All right. We go to Clevo for round number 5.
Oh, give him a hard one, please.
Clevo, what is the name of the second song on Ignite, Call on My Brothers? Hint, it's the name of a pre-Sigvidal Craig Sitari band.
Oh, that would be Straight Ahead.
A point to Clevo.
You don't need the extra hints.
Dude, well, who's
on that one, you probably do, but not that easy.
No, because it could have been another. It could have been Youth of Today. Who knows? Right?
Like Janosch going wild.
That's right. That's right. All right, Dan, we go to you. Round number 5. On the Clash LP, London Calling, when the song Wrong'em Boyo is written on the back cover of the first press, is the apostrophe before EM or after?
Well, Jesus Christ, because if you think about it, you're asking me if they know how to do, if they know how to do, correct grammar or not, you know.
Well, I'll give you a hint. It's The Clash, not Rick DeLife.
Well, I mean, it has to be before, but yeah, I'm going to say it's Wrong apostrophe EM Boyo, right?
A point.
Not Wrong. Oh, thank God. Jesus Christ, you had me like, I mean, it's not something you would know, but unless it was legendarily stuck out as being like bad, but I think I would have noticed that.
Dude, if someone else got that question, you would have been heated. Why are you serving up an easy question like
not
that?
Not really, because that's it could go either way, because the reason that you're plucking it out to talk about is because that it was wrong, you know? I don't know. Because it was wrong, boyo.
Well, Clevo's going to get the heat in round 6, so you will be satisfied, champ.
It's fine. Clevo is a wonderful competitor, unlike his football team, Arsenal.
Oh, I was waiting for that one.
All right. Clevo, which came first, the Ramones self-titled LP or the McDonald's Egg McMuffin?
Oh, the heat.
The Egg McMuffin.
A point to Clevo.
There you go.
So actually he wasn't studying hardcore for the last week. He was studying fast food and the years that that certain items were.
Dude,
made.
It's all pop culture.
Yeah. Well, the Egg McMuffin, it debuted in 1972 at the Santa Barbara location and it went national in 1974. So no Chipotle controversy. The Ramones LP came out in 1976. How about that? All right, Dan, we go to you for round number 6.
All right.
Cox Bar Shock Troops was originally released on this label, which is also a killer unbroken song.
Shock Troops was originally on. Oh, God. All right, let me think of unbroken songs then. Oh, fuck. Okay. I get it. Razor Records.
A point to the champ.
Oh, my God. I was like, yeah, it wasn't on D4.
Okay. Well, for the first time, we are premiering a Daily Double Round.
Okay.
Okay.
Ben, let's go to you for the subtotals. What is the score as of right now?
As of right now, Dan has 5 and Clevo has 7.
All right. Well, you can wager your points. You can double them or you can lose them. And it is to guess what the 25 to life lyrics are on the song that I play. So wager cautiously. Clevo, how many points would you like to risk on this challenge?
I'm going to wager 1 point.
Okay. All right. Let's play Clevo's song. And if you would like it repeated, we can do that. Here we go.
Can we roll that back one time?
You got it. Here we go.
Okay. I got some. Truth is what you live for the.
But a noble effort for the first time ever. I feel like you should get a half point, but no. Dan, you can't steal because you're going to get your own. I'm going to say what it is, and then I'm going to play it back so everyone can listen and sing along. He says, "You hate what you have come to be."
Ugh,
here we go.
Really? Sure.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Okay, Rick.
How about that?
Respect to you, RTL King of the NYHCC.
All right, Dan, let's go to you for yours. How many points do you want to wager of your 5?
Well, he's on 6 now, so let's wager all 5.
Whoa.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Well, I'm either going to win or lose. So,
yeah. A good point, Daniel, representing YOLO for the people. Okay, here we go, Dan.
I think it was the same word over and over again.
Can we roll it back? Would you like to hear it again?
Yes, I would like to hear it 2 more times, please.
All right, 2 in a row. Here we go. Otro más. All right, gonna need an answer.
Can I hear it 1 more time, please?
For the people.
I gotta think of just some, like, what he would say. I don't know. I'm going to just think of some things that they would say, like, "You don't give respect, you must pay."
That points to the champ. Oh, my God. No, I'm just playing. All right, he says, "I remember you said that you'd always be there for me."
Shit, I did think that the word "remember" was in there, but then I've... Wow.
Let's hear it 1 more time.
Okay, that is ridiculous. At least when, like, for the one that you'd played before, like, I was like, oh, okay, he did say that. That one, it doesn't sound like it at all.
It totally sounds like it. And Ben, let's go to you for the final score.
All right, we have Clevo with a total of 6 and the reigning champion, Daniel Sant, with 0 points. He wagered all 5 points and he lost.
Dan, should have wagered 4 so you wouldn't end up with that donut. What's up?
Oh, you know, it's death or glory, to quote a song from London Calling.
How about that? All right, congratulations, Clevo.
Congrats, Clevo.
Thanks.
Way to go, dude.
What's up, everyone? This week on the pod, we are talking hardcore, helping out. You know him, you love him. He is the best dressed man on the pod. He is Daniel Sant. What's up, Dan?
What's going on? I'm wearing 12 bucket hats at once right now.
Oh, skills, dude. What's up? All right. Also helping out, it is Ben Edge, a.k.a. Ben Merlis, a.k.a. Bedge. What's up, Ben?
How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Ben, you got to do your proper intro to tribute to your friend.
Yeah, but you stole it from me. Now you say that every time. What's going on?
Oh.
Did I say what's going
on? Yeah, you did. It's fine. We can both say that.
I did it as a tribute to your friend, too.
Okay, I appreciate that.
It's Ben Edge, a.k.a. Ben Merlis, a.k.a. Bedge, a.k.a. Ben, a.k.a. Salty Bedge. All right. Also helping out, once again, don't you dare call him Cincinnati. It is Clevo. What's up, Clevo?
What's going on, guys?
Yeah, man. Good to have you back. All right, Daniel, you wanted to talk about this topic. Go ahead and jump in.
Yeah, I was thinking it'd be pretty interesting if we discussed songs that really stand out on records that are kind of universally not regarded as the best material from bands, or sometimes are regarded as terrible. So I wanted to explore what I kind of coined to when I spoke to you lot about it, called it Diamonds in the Rough. And so, you know, we've each picked a couple songs off of records that are generally regarded as a letdown compared to the other stuff the band is famous for, you know, but the one song on that record that kind of stands out and is like definitely worth giving, you know, telling people, hey, check this one out. If you've never heard it, you might want to skip the rest of the record, but check this one out.
Yeah, I think it's super cool. And I took it the wrong way originally. Like I was choosing like obscure songs that I like, but that's not this exercise. This is, like you said, albums that people don't think is the best material of the band, but there is like that hidden gem on the record where you're like, good God, this song like blows my hair back.
Gives you that Maxell tape beauty.
That's right. If you hear it live, you might catch the hardcore Holy Ghost. What's up? All right, Clevo, let's go to you for your two first.
All right, so my first one, I'm going to pick No Pain, No Gain by DYS off of the second DYS album. Largely regarded as the, you know, the DYS rock record. Also features Dave Smalley. I believe it's Dave Christian Smalley on the album with a gecko on his shoulder. So that really is all you need to know about this record. I actually first found out about the song probably the way I think some other people have. Half Off covered it. It's on the Half Off LP, The Truth, which is also, in my estimation, it might be the worst record that everyone I know owns. We can get into that another time, though. But after hearing that and finding out that it was a DYS cover, in the 90s, when Tang started packaging some older stuff together, they did a Wolfpack Fire and Ice combined CD, and this was on here. And you know, I finally got to hear the original version of the song. And after skipping through most of the other record, you know, it was definitely worth tracking down. It's just a classic, tough, hardcore song. It's about working out and like just being, you know, it's everything that you expected DYS to be on their second album. Like the lyrics are getting bigger, tougher, meaner and stronger. It's just a song that will literally just make you run through walls and, you know, just totally gets you pumped up. The rest of that record is not getting you pumped up.
What year is that LP?
That's actually an excellent question.
85.
Boom.
There you go.
So he goes from gecko on the shoulder to Do Can I Say?
Yeah.
The weirdest thing. That's what makes this record so weird. Is he got like they got whack and then he got sick again. But if you go back to the UFO Dagnasty episode 1, the legend Joe Rivas dropped the knowledge on us that Dave Smalley was brought in pretty close to the last minute for Can I Say. Right? So he probably wasn't in the room for like the song crafting.
Yeah, but because Ian was producing it, did Ian say, all right, gecko at the door. Like, you need to come correct.
Dude, lizards are cool as fuck. What are you talking about?
I agree, but maybe lizard men are not.
No. This song rules, dude. And it's so weird listening to the song. And I should say, Everyone go to 185milessouth.com. Click that playlist link. There is a playlist for every episode, so you can listen to these songs. Listening to this song is wild because, yes, this is a standout track on the record. I've listened to it for a long time because it's like kind of universally known as the song that kicks ass on the shitty record here. So this is a perfect pick. But what I thought was wild about the song is his singing both detracts from this song and makes it amazing. Because, like, I wish he was shouting during the verses. And then also, like, the way that he sings when he hits, like, the notes that he hits is amazing. So it's just, like, I wish he did some shouting and then kept that part. You know, he's, like, pushing his boundaries, but he won't go back to, like, the shouty, like, wildness, you know?
So two things about that. One, you know, this is definitely in the era where these guys all discovered AC/DC. And, you know, not that this sounds like AC/DC, but, you know, this was when they were all trying to do their rock records. But you can track down, there's a video on YouTube of DYS playing in Philly, and they do this, and it sounds like DYS playing the song and not like the later era DYS playing, and it's just so much better.
Yeah, it's wild, though, because, like, the AC/DC singer by this time only yells. Like, he's so monotone, right? Like, I don't know, just yell, Dave. What the fuck?
Yeah, I heard an interview with him recently. I think it was on the End on End podcast, where he talked about, probably on the Can I Say episode, where he talked about how any record he goes into record, he just comes up with a voice that, like, he thinks is the best voice for that job. In other words, he doesn't have a consistent singing voice. If you can follow me there, does that make sense?
Yeah, it's like he does impressions of different singers.
He's just feeling the vibe in the room, man.
Totally.
You know, hard to explain to straight edge people. No, but it's cash. You just got to get in and feel the vibe, man, and then just let loose.
Quick other story about this song. When Stop and Think was going to record our demo, Joey made a mixtape to get us pumped up in the van to listen to on the way there. And I use the word mixtape really loosely. It was basically the first side of the Steve Reddy Wolfpack album, this song, and then the B side of the Steve Reddy Wolfpack album. And that was his mixtape to get us pumped up to go record the Stop and Think demo.
Well, and then Righteous Jams comes out and it looks like he's been doing No Pain, No Gain.
Yeah.
And, rules. And that band One Sided War that Matt Bold sang for named themselves after a lyric from this song.
Yep.
Yeah, and we should say that Dillinger 4 covered this song and knocked it out of the park. What's up?
I believe that's on one of those Suburban Voice comps that came with a am I talking out of school with that?
No, you're right. I think no, so.
I believe you're right. And I downloaded on some weird, like, internet comp thing, you know, that, like, put all their B-sides together.
Shout out to both of the Boston Owls.
Yeah, man. right on.
But I gotta say, though, I actually like this album, and I think there are quite a few good songs on it, and this isn't even my favorite one. My favorite song on this album is The Loner, and it's, I think, maybe track 3. It's like a real raging hardcore song, and he does sing, you know, with that heavy metal voice, which kind of maybe isn't the best voice. And if I think if he sang with that gruff Brotherhood voice that he did on the first album, this would be like considered ground zero for metalcore, which, like, Integrity gets credit for, you know, 5 or 6 years later. But I like Held Back, and I like Late Night, and I like The Loner. Those are three other songs I like on this album.
Yeah, but this isn't metalcore, like, this is wank metalcore.
Like, no, but musically, a lot of it is just really good. Like, if you can just kind of get the vocals out of your mind and just concentrate on the guitar, bass, and drums, it's musically pretty good. I don't know.
But it's in the butt lane, right? Not the
yes, exactly. Lane. That's what I mean when I say wank metal. Like, I just fucking threw the mic across the room accidentally.
No, it's following CeCe DeVille, not Jeff Hanneman.
There you go.
But I also think that there's probably a small fraction of people out there, because, you know, these records were readily available in dollar bin records around, that this might have been a group of people's introduction to DYS. And you have this group of people, so like, this album would be their introduction to DYS. Like, How We Rock or Break It Up would be their introduction to SSD. And like, there's all those other like random records from like this era of hardcore, that this could be their introduction. And they would be like, oh, you got to listen to DYS. And you go and you pick up this record and you're like, well, what the hell is everyone talking about that I need to listen to this? Because it's so far off from what they were actually doing.
That's definitely happened with all of us, where we've had something recommended to us and we've bought the wrong record.
Well, try getting into SSD in the 90s when your entry point is Power. It's like it's the worst comp ever. It's like the worst comp of a band's songs.
But even still in the 90s, you could find How We Rock for like less than $5 in bins around Boston.
Oh, and in San Diego.
Yeah.
And those are the songs you're skipping on Power. So anyway. All right. Clevo, let's go to you for your second song.
My second song is going to be Dag Nasty off of Field Day, and the song is All Ages Show.
And then the song on the playlist is not the one that you wanted, but it's the only one that's on Spotify, correct?
Yeah, so Field Day is not up on Spotify. There is a version that was on the Discord. What was it? The 20 Years of Discord box set.
Discord 100, I think.
That came out. Was it 20 years or 30 years? When did that come out?
It came out in maybe 02, but it's 20 years. So it's like all the stuff between 1980 and 2000. Not all the stuff, but yeah, that's what it covers. And it's, I want to say Discord 150. I should know this, but it's not Discord 100. It's later than that.
Okay. But yeah, it's a 20 years of Discord. There's a lot of outtakes and rarities on there. This is an older Dag Nasty song that never got a proper release until Field Day. The version that's on the playlist does not have the slick production that Field Day did. Field Day, and actually, as we were just talking about, I went to Camelot Music in the mall to buy a Dag Nasty tape, and I ended up buying this because it was the only one they had, and it was not Can I Say or Wig Out. So that was kind of a rough introduction for me. Fortunately, there are three or four really good songs on the cassette version. The vinyl version does not have this. This is a just like classic Dag Nasty, like perfect melodic hardcore, really good lyrics, you know, kind of more meaningful to me now that I'm older than when I was like 16 years old when I first heard it. But yeah, I really, really, really do like the song. It did come out as a 7-inch at the same time. They tacked it on to the cassette version and on the CD version, which, fun fact, the Dag Nasty Field Day, even though I knew the record wasn't great, was actually the second CD I bought, because CDs were such a rarity at that time. I just really wanted to have a CD, and it had the song on it.
What's the first CD you bought?
The first CD I bought was the Gorilla Biscuits 99 track Start Today.
Oh, I love that one.
In cardboard.
Oh no, it was in a jewel case.
Oh, okay.
This song kicks ass. Like, I had never heard it before, and it is great. It reminds me of kind of how Good Riddance sounds. And it made me like it even more. This song was just awesome. Ben, have you always heard the song and enjoyed it?
Yeah, I've always liked the song. And Field Day, I agree with Clevo, is not a very good album. In fact, it's the more I listen to Dag Nasty, the more I like Can I Say, and the more I dislike Field Day. It's got like two good songs. Like every time I listen to it, I'm like, oh, I remember like half this album being good. And I'm like, what half of this album is good? There's like the song Field Day is like, the song Field Day is pretty good. That's the part, that's the one where he's all like, here on the beach, I got the surf, I got the sun, and I got Mexican food. It's like, all right, they're singing about Mexican food and being on the beach, right? That's a big Zach. That's a big plus for Zach. He's into that shit. And then, that's like, right. That song Matt is pretty good. Matt. But the rest of it's like pretty fucking terrible.
And well, you do get the Ruts cover.
Yeah. And I definitely heard that before I heard the Ruts. And so that's cool, like pointing people in the direction of like, here's music that influenced us. But once you've heard the Ruts version, the original, it's like, why would I ever need to hear the Dag Nasty version again? Like, just listen to the original. But and Brian Baker does not like this album, which shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. And he says that he was listening to a lot of this blues guitarist named Robert Cray when he wrote these songs, and he figured he could make any kind of music he wanted and it would come out good. And it's like, no, you have artistic limitations. And it's like, you know, a lesson learned when, I suppose he was probably, you know, 22 or 23 when he learned that, oh, I can't just do anything I want and have it come out good.
Then he was just like, oh, I should just probably play Mr. Brett songs instead.
Yeah, it was a little later.
Anyway.
You know what it was? Right after this came out, he joined Junkyard. Yeah, it's like, I'll play butt rock instead.
Well, that's crazy to think that he was listening to Robert Cray, because you would never guess that he listened to the blues at all, even when you hear this record. But then it totally makes sense that he went into Junkyard, because that makes sense. That does not make sense for Field Day at all.
Yeah. Dan, how do you feel about the song?
Well, first of all, I would say Junkyard doesn't make sense in any regard. For a member of Minor Threat to be in Junkyard doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, this song's cool. I've never liked Field Day. I've given it plenty of chances, and it's awful to me. I pretty much, you know, this might sound blasphemous to some of the people listening and a couple of the people who are in this discussion right now, but Dag Nasty is just, can I say, only for me. Everything else, not interested.
I think that's another conversation for another day. Ben, let's go to you for your two gems.
Okay, before I start talking about these, this is an internal discussion here. If you look at the Zencaster and you look at how people talk and you can see waveforms next to the line next to their names, do you see that?
Yeah, you're eating your microphone.
No, but there's no waveforms coming out on my line. Do you see that? There's nothing.
No, I see him on my end.
Yeah, I see him here.
Okay, on my end, it's nothing. Okay, good.
And yours are huge on all of our ends.
Because you're eating your microphone.
Okay. That's why I was
all in post-production. That's
fix it post. What I'm
okay, I'll pause for 5 seconds just to make it easier on you. Okay, my first pick is the song Zero Hour from the first Unbroken album, which is entitled Ritual, which came out in 1993. And I always thought the record cover looked amazing. It's a photograph. God, I can't remember who these people are, but they literally bury themselves and while praying. So you see hands coming out of the sand, you know, praying hands coming out of the sand. And it's just the coolest record cover. And I love, you know, Life, Love, Regret and the last 2 7-inches. And I even like the first 7-inch, which people don't seem to like very much. But this album, I only like this song, and it's the first song on the album. So it's like, yeah, this shit is starting strong. And then you get to the rest of it, and it's like, it's not that good. I don't know. I'd love to know what Rob thinks of my assessment, because I did see footage of Unbroken playing the Che maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, and they did do this song. So if they pulled this one out of their back pocket and not the other songs on this album, maybe there is a little bit of consensus that this is better than the rest of the record. But what do you guys think of this one?
Well, I think that this song kicks ass. I love it. Like, I think that the main verse riff is amazing. My only knock would be, like, there's a hell of a lot of whammy bar on here. Like, so much that Greg Offense might say, like, kick it on the whammy bar, you know? But other than that, like, I love this song the whole way through. I think it's, like, a perfect 90s metalcore song, you know? And I do think it's the best song on the record. I don't think the record falls off as much as you do. But, you know, in the two Rob interviews I did, I can't remember which one, but we talked about it. Basically, by the time this album came out, like, they had already moved on to Life of Regret, and they were playing mostly songs off that even before it was released, you know? So I do think that, you know, they moved on pretty quickly. But this song kicks ass, and we should get his take on, is this song like an upper echelon song compared to the rest of the album? And Dan, you might know. How do you feel about the song, and do you know?
I know that this is one of the ones that, yeah, like Ben said, they pulled back out, but to give a nod to this time period of the band. But Break Me Down, which is the fifth song on the LP, is also a banger. And yes, this album is a little bit more one note than, you know, anything else they really did, but it still does not deserve to be regarded as a, you know, well, actually, it's fine. It's giving, you know, Shine to Zero Hour, which is a hell of a song. And
yeah, and
Dan, I love the sound of the recording of this.
I think the recording is great. And I think this is a good time to talk about the exercise, right? Because I do not think this is a bad album by any means. In fact, I think it's actually a great example of 90s metalcore, you know, but stacked up against Life of Regret, like, this is definitely not regarded the classic material of this band. So Ben plucking a song off it is kind of nice, because you can say, just like Ben said, right? Listen to this song off this album and then listen to Life of Regret and the last couple 7 inches.
Definitely. I feel Unbroken is one of the bands that, you know, we've did the sophomore album exercise, which, you know, we stated that there wasn't a vast amount of hardcore bands that are better later on, you know, but this being one of them. And it's really interesting to hear them going for an LP and not quite, you know, nailing their sound yet, or they're tapping into the emotional side of the band as hard as they do later on. And but you can hear in Zero Hour some of the markings of like a Blanket or a D4, you know, you can hear the, like, the impetus or the little like seedlings breaking through the ground that then become, you know, mighty oak trees later on.
I love it.
I'd be curious to know, like, if Zero Hour, like, when they wrote this in their career, you know, because it is like the lead off song. It's the strongest song on the record, I think. And, you know, I hadn't listened to this record in a long time, but, you know, going back, I listened to Zero Hour and I was like, man, this is great. I should listen to the rest of the record. And then, you know, like, as it went on, I was like, it sounds very of the time. Whereas Zero Hour sounds like you could have plucked this off and put it on Life, Love, Regret, and it would totally fit. So I'm curious if it was a newer song that when they had recorded this, or if it was an older song. Yeah, it's a great song. I never go back and listen to this record. If I'm going to listen to Unbroken, you know, I listen to Life, Love, Regret, or the 7 inches, like everyone else said. But yeah, this is a great song. I'm glad we picked it so I can go back and listen to it.
That's a great question that you pose, right? Yeah. Like, was this written early in the process of writing this LP, or, like, was it, like, you know, like lots of bands, you write a song like the day that you record or the day before, you know, like, what if it was like the final song of writing this album? Like, that would make total sense, right?
Especially putting it first, because you're so excited about it. You want it to open. You want it to be the banger that, you know, introduces you. Reggie,
I mean, it definitely sounds like an opener.
Yeah. I mean, this
just
song,
the way it kicks in.
Yeah. Everyone check in on the playlist. Ben, what's your second song?
Yeah, so my second song is also another opening track on an album. It's the song Cool Mountaineer, which is on the Bad Brains album God of Love, Maverick Records, 1995. I know a little bit of the backstory behind this song. It was actually written by HR about Sean Ross, who is the bassist of the band XL. And HR was staying with him at the time. And Sean t- told me that HR would always say, you were the cool. I'm not going to do the fake Jamaican patois voice, but you're the cool mountaineer. He'd always call him. That was his nickname for Sean. And I can't remember why. Like, he probably had some little reason why Sean was the cool mountaineer. But then this was like 94, and then the album comes out in 95, and the first song is Cool Mountaineer. It's like, fuck yeah, Bad Brains wrote a song about me. How amazing is that, you know? But the song rips, and it's got these super fast verses, and then it's got these slow choruses, and it just bounces back and forth between them. And the whole album pretty much falls apart after this song. And I don't think Bad Brains ever made another good record. Like, they have maybe two or three albums after this one, and I don't think those are good records. I think, just like we were talking about earlier, some bands must know, like, oh, this is our best song. Let's just put it first, you know? Like, it couldn't be a coincidence.
This song kicks so much ass. It's wild. And, yeah, I wonder how he got the Mountaineer thing. Do you think that he was always fixing, like, the satellite dish on the roof?
We could ask him. We could have him on the show.
We should. But, dude, this song is great. It starts, like, almost like Iron Maiden-esque. And then just kicks fast, and it is so good. But I would just say, like, the one thing that takes away from the song a bit is just that it repeats the Cool Mountaineer thing maybe too much. Like, I love it on the slow parts. I kind of wish it didn't do that on the verses. In fact, on the final verse, it goes, like, really short, and he just, like, kind of, like, yeah-yeahs it. And it would almost be iller if he just did that on the verses, you know, and doesn't go to the Cool Mountaineer thing and just yeah it all the way through the verse. Like, it sounds so sick when he does it at the end, and then to have the Cool Mountaineer hooks on the slower parts. I don't know, but I'd never heard this song before, and it pretty much blew me away. I absolutely love it. I think it's great. Dan, what's your familiarity with this song?
Pretty familiar, but I'd left it in the past. have not revisited it since this, maybe since the early 2000s, perhaps, where I went into a major Bad Brains, like, enveloped myself in all things Bad Brains for a couple months. I think this is a classic case of the last hurrah of you know, like pulling on a memory string of stuff in the past. But I still think when you listen to this, you go, oh, but this is the band that did that. And this is just such a watered down version of that, you know? So it is musically, like, super enjoyable. And HR is almost HR on it. Do you know what I mean? But I feel it's just watered down Bad Brains, as lots of Bad Brains before this and after this were. So, I mean, I do enjoy it compared to the rest of God Is Love, but, you know, much like Clevo just said about, well, 0 Hour was great, but I'll listen to Life, Love, Regret and the 7 Inches. Cool Mountaineer is okay, but I love the fact that this is brought up for this assignment, but I just love raw tape too much to even let this process in my brain.
Yeah, but I think that if you toss this on Eye Against Eye, it's not the worst song. You know, I think it's like, it's in the conversation of, like, the great songs on that album.
Especially if it's recorded in the Eye Against Eye recording session, so it sounds even more of that. Yeah, definitely, it would probably stand up above quite a few songs.
I was gonna push it more towards Quickness. I think if this was on Quickness and recorded with Quickness, it would definitely have it. This song could also be on Rise very easily and not even have HR on vocals. Although I would prefer Bad Brains with HR on vocals, but this song could totally be on Rise. I probably haven't listened to the song in 25 years, in all honesty. I bought this CD right when it came out. This song came on, and I was like, okay, this is, you know, I can get down with this. And then that just, like, fades just so quickly with the rest of this album. And pretty much this CD hasn't been in my collection for probably close to about 20 years. I just never listened to it. Because everything Quickness and Before exists. So, why do I need to listen to this? But I will say Build a Nation, I thought had a couple tracks too. We probably could have picked a track off Build a Nation for this exercise. But it's kind of the same thing. It's just HR is just not HR anymore.
Yeah. The problem with Build a Nation is they're really trying to be themselves from the early 80s. And it feels like Into the Future, the last one, is them trying to be themselves from the late 80s. Yeah. And this song, Cool Mountaineer, is just them doing what they do. It doesn't sound like they're in like historical recreation mode yet. You know?
Gotcha.
That's what I think too. That's why I said it might land on Eye Against Eye, because that's as far back as it could go and fit. Like, you couldn't toss this on Roar.
No.
You know, but I think this song is awesome. It blew me away. And it also makes me think a little bit, not in too much of a tangent, but you know, I got into hardcore like the most recently out of the four people on this podcast. And when you have a band like the Bad Brains and you get into hardcore in like 96 with limited resources and limited things available, you're playing so much catch up, you know, and even like, let's say you got into hardcore today, you know, how do you do all this catch up? And I would hope that that's like one of the advantage of our podcast and lots of the podcasts out there, is like kind of guide people to the good stuff, because there's just a plethora of things out there. And like, so for me, I'm trying to learn the history of hardcore, you know, 15 years after it starts. And this just never comes across my plate, you know, because you're told like, oh, like, here's what you need of the Bad Brains. Like, don't worry about the like the later stuff, you know? So like, I've legit never listened to this, because why would I? Like, I'm trying to like find the other stuff. And so it is cool when something like this gets presented to me and I'm like, oh my God, like, this song kicks ass.
At the same time, you totally could have walked into a record store and be like, oh, I heard the Bad Brains are a hardcore band. And you could have literally bought this record when it was brand new.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was everywhere, because it's on Maverick.
The 90s wasn't just playing catch up. It was playing Russian roulette, because you just don't know if you're going to end up with a dud, you know? Because you just can't listen to this shit in advance. And now the dilemma now is there's just so much fucking music. Where do you even start? So it's like a kind of we had that dilemma then, and the added problem of having to actually pay for this shit to hear it. But yeah, it's overwhelming.
This is another topic for another day, but I think that the problem still exists, right? Because now, with everything being out there, we're so dismissive of music that someone can recommend something. You go on Spotify, you click it, and it's like the wrong version, and you're like, oh, that sucks, and you write it off for the rest of your life, right? Like, that's pretty terrible. At least in the 90s, like, if you bought something that was bad, you like tried to like it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I still remember 7 inches I bought where I was like, I like one part of one song. And like, I kept it in my collection. You know what I mean? Like, it's wild. And also, like, when we talk about like the resources of buying things compared to now, like, everything's available streaming. Yeah, it's available on like YouTube and stuff. But if you're paying for something like Spotify, like, we're the ultimate suckers, right? Like, now we are just paying to rent music. Like, it's totally stupid and whatever. Like, again, it's another conversation for another day. But like, we're paying like $10 a month to like rent shit and not own it. It's stupid.
Well, here's 2 points that kind of like what we've just touched on in this kind of rambling discussion that this song has birthed. One, this is on a major label, on Maverick Records. They were signed by like Madonna's imprint for, I don't know, is it Sony? I don't.
Warner Brothers at the time.
Okay, yeah. So they were signed for that. There's a good chance that this was picked as song one because it may have been in listening stations all across, you know, the warehouse and Tower Records, you know, across the thing. So, like, people who know the name Bad Brains go, oh, let me check out the new Bad Brains. The first song, they're like, oh, I'm going to buy this. And then they're like, oh, God, when they get home. And then secondly, I feel like in today's day and age, I think tons of people, once they find the good records of the bands, the other stuff's not even being paid no mind at all, because why bother? If you've got the good stuff on Spotify, why even bother with the bad stuff? Unless you want to go full demo core and say, you know, be a counterpoint merchant and say, no, this is what we're going to base our sound on.
Yeah, 185 podcast is not the place for edgelords. All right, let's go on to mine. The first song I'm choosing is off the Cro-Mags album Revenge that came out in the year 2000. And the song I'm choosing is Tore Up. This song, I think there's some problematic lyrics in it. And when I was listening again today, I was like, ooh, I think there's even more problematic lyrics in this. But this song straight rips. It's like great Cro-Mags in that way where you're like, if you mash up Motorhead with a hardcore band, like this is what it sounds like. It's just so raging, and like they find that perfect like D-beat tempo, but it doesn't sound like dark and punk like D-beat. It sounds like the Cro-Mags and Motorhead. It's so wild. This song just kicks ass like straight through, and I absolutely love it. And this album, I don't have too much to say about it. I'm sure it's fine, but this song just stands out as a gem. And what did you guys think about it? Dan, let's go to you.
It's a ripping song. I'll be honest, I'm not really familiar with this Cro-Mags record because, I mean, I never checked it out because I just knew that it's probably, you know, not for me at the time when I have Age of Quarrel in my collection, you know. Also, sometimes, you know, Mr. Flanagan can sometimes just turn you away from things with his antics. So, yeah, shame on me for probably not knowing the entire catalog. But, yeah, this rips. And I like his vocal range on it. How he's, you know, kind of pissed, but then he has the elements to be able to get a little bit higher and a little bit more tuneful in the second part of the song.
Yeah, I think his lyrics, his like vocals on this are pretty great. Like I know people love Best Wishes. I don't love it outside of Death Camps, but his vocals can get a little grating on that album, and they don't bother me at all here. I think that they're pretty great. And I'm a big fan of that Harley Flanagan album, Cro-Mags, that came out. It's like two albums ago, I think. That album is so good. It's like one of those things. He put it out, and like I was like, oh my god, this is so good. And I never heard anything about it. And then he like did a tour and didn't play any songs off it, and then put out another record. It's like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I don't know. It's just weird. Like sometimes musicians don't realize when they do something awesome, you know, and just move on from it. I don't know.
Yeah. I was going to say this record definitely musically sounds like the Cro-Mags, probably because it's Paris and Harley. I prefer his vocals on that Cro-Mag album to this. I don't like his vocals on Best Wishes. I don't really care for his vocals on this, but I think his vocals on that Cro-Mag album, you know, what you were saying is that Cro-Mag album has definitely more of a D-beat Discharge influence on it. But when you think of what the Cro-Mags were, it was Bad Brains, Discharge, and Motorhead all rolled up into one. So you're always going to get that Motorhead feel. I think, you know, and definitely Harley, you know, definitely has great bass sound. Also, we haven't mentioned that, you know, Rocky George does play guitar on this as well. So you get that. Right Brigade played with the Cro-Mags when they were touring on this record, and I can't remember if Rocky George was there. I definitely watched them for a bit and don't remember at all. I can't remember if they played as a three-piece or if Rocky George was there, but they were really good. I just can't get down with Harley's vocals.
Ben, how do you feel about this one?
Yeah, I had never heard this before for the same reasons that Dan never checked this album out. I'm in that boat as well. I just figured, it's the Cro-Mags, but it's really just half of them, or two-fifths of them, you know, the Harley and Paris. So, I don't need to hear this. And then I listened to this song, you know, a couple of days ago, and a few other songs on the album, and I'm like, it's pretty good. Like, you know, they're always going to be living in the shadow of their first album. There's just no way around it. But also, they're writing songs that pretty much sound like their first album. So it's like, what you get is what you get. It's like there's not much else going on there. The lyrics, I kind of made it out. It's like vaguely about how he used to be hooked on drugs. Is that what he's singing about?
That's what it sounds like. He's tore up, dude.
Right. So I thought that was kind of funny.
From the floor up.
Yeah, it's like...
It sounded honest. Like, it sounds like something that only he can sing about, right? Like, if other people are singing a song like this, they're imposters, but, you know, this is Harley Flanagan. Like, this is probably a true tale.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty good song. I thought, you know, this, it's nothing that could compare to Age of Coral, but it's all right. I thought there's another song on the album called Jones, and that's kind of like them trying to be the Misfits, maybe. That's like very melodic punk. I thought that was kind of interesting because I had never heard these guys do that kind of music before. But this song, you know, like the lyrics are on the nose. It's all right. It's like, I don't know if you'd be like really missing out on anything if you never heard this, but it's not laughable.
But are you really missing out on anything if you don't hear any of the songs on this list, right? Other than the Unbroken one, maybe. I don't know. Like, again, it's like these bands all have classic material outside of this. So it's kind of silly to dismiss the song for, well, they have classic material, so I don't need this. Well, that's the whole point of the exercise, is we're saying take the classic plus one. Anyway, moving on to my next one. I am taking the song Peace by Agnostic Front. It came out on their album Another Voice in 2004. I like every single Agnostic Front album. Like, again, it's just like, I don't know, I guess like Cro-Mags or even like Slayer. You know, like Slayer's classic stuff is early. AF, like the classic stuff, is the first four albums plus the live album. And I just want them to be a band forever. I want them to keep touring. And so when they put out a new record and tour, I'm stoked. And their albums are always listenable. Like, I don't ever feel like I need to turn them off. And I enjoy them all. And this one was a pretty good album, I thought. But this song is such a standout. And it's a later Agnostic Front album that doesn't get a ton of shine. So I chose it. I do think this song is the greatest Hatebreed song after Satisfaction is the Death of Desire. This song is so perfect in that way. Like the way with the double kick and like the chorus. Dun, 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 dun. Peace. Dun, 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 dun. I can't do the mouth drumming, dude. I'm failing. But I don't know. I just absolutely love it. I think this song is a perfect hardcore song. And it's great. Dan, what do you think?
That's cool that you said it was like Hatebreed. To me, I was like, this is the best Madball song that Roger sang on. Like, when I listened to it, I was not that familiar with this, and this song rules.
I'm 99% sure that Jamie wrote it.
Yeah. Or did Matt Henderson write it?
I mean, it sounds like Matt Henderson wrote it, but Zach's probably right. But it rules either way. It's a really good song, and Roger is really strong on it. He's doing, you know, the Roger voice that Rick to Life wants to rip off so much. I really liked it. I'm glad that it's in this discussion because, yeah, it should totally get some shine, and people who would just go to Victim in Pain should, you know, like maybe check out some later stuff because these people live, breathe, and are the DNA of hardcore.
Yeah, Matt Henderson plays guitar on it.
Yeah.
And it's produced by Jamie Josta. So again, it could do this
collab.
This could be the Henderson Josta matchup.
Yeah.
And it's just magic. I love this song. Ben, tell us why you hate this song.
Because it's exactly how I'd expect an Agnostic Front song to sound like, that it's, that's from the 2000s on an album that is a sequel to the album One Voice, because I don't like One Voice either. And it's, since the second album, it seems like Roger's voice sounds like he's trying to be Wendy O. Williams from the Plasmatics. You know, he's like, in your monkey suit, you just sound like a monkey. You know, like that kind of strained voice I never was into. I can tolerate it on the second Agnostic Front album, but after that, it loses me. And you know, this is probably what would this be? The eighth album?
Something like that. Something You're like in that. The seventh range.
Yeah. It's exact. I thought, oh, well, so this is kind of like a not very good album, but this is a good song on it. And then I heard it and I'm like, no, this is exactly what I thought any song on an album called Another Voice would be like. It's just,
yeah,
like,
but you just don't like the, you don't like the style of music.
I don't like the style of music. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, or the style of singing.
Yeah. And I love both. So I love his voice. You know, it's like, yeah, how Dan said, right? If Rick DeLife is doing this voice on 10, like Roger's doing it on like 6.5, and it's perfect. Clevo, what do you think about this?
Yeah, you know, I had not heard this before, because I've been, you know, pretty dismissive of a lot of later Agnostic Front since they've reunited. As soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, I wonder if Matt plays guitar on this. So shout out to Matt Henderson. Yeah, it's that One Voice. You know, if you like One Voice, you probably like this record if you haven't listened to it. The song's good. You know, but definitely, you know, if you like Madball, if you like One Voice, you know, this is definitely right up your alley. Yeah, I don't know if there's really too much more to say. I kind of go back and forth whether how I feel about the Roger voice. You know, I like it much more than, you know, trying to decipher Rick's vocals, but it's definitely where Rick got it from. But yeah, overall, you know, it's great production. You know, it is Agnostic Front has all of these eras. It definitely fits in that one Agnostic Front, you know, era that they sounded like this for a point in time.
It sounds huge.
Yeah.
I agree with all that, but I also think that this double kick is great. It's just so simple and perfect, and it's what it should be. So, but anyway, Daniel, let's go on to yours. What is your first pick?
All right. Well, I'll go with the album that is not regarded as the best material, but some people listening may be like, Dan, you're fucking tripping, like, that LP rules. Well, I regard it as the start of the decline or the missteps of this band. So, but this song on it is amazing. So I am going with Gomorrah's Season Ends off of Gomorrah's Season Ends by Earth Crisis. I feel the album as a whole is very one note, and it is, I think they're a little bit up their own behinds on this, and not believe in the hype, because they're hyped for a very good reason. I think they are believing their place as the forefront of metalcore at the time. So,
which they are, though.
Yes, they are, but I was saying, like, there's not enough. Look at the Firestorm 7-inch, for example. It's all metalcore, but there's different tempos. There's different, you know, song ideas, like Unseen Holocaust compared to Firestorm, compared to Forged in the Flames. Like, three very different songs, you know? Whereas I feel on this LP, there's, besides Morality Dictates and this one, I feel there's so much filler, which they'd never really done before. Anyway, so let's talk about the song. It is awesome, the fact that the lyrics are delivered in almost like run-on sentences, where they go from the the verse goes almost like a, almost in the round to an extent, because he ends and punctuates each line before going into the next one, but the lines haven't necessarily finished yet. Do you know what I mean? Like the actual lyric line hasn't finished yet. And I think that sounds so cool. Like it is, like a wheel, you know, like rolling down the street almost, like the way that it's doing. And it sounds so good. I think the lyrics are straight edge melodrama to the finest. You know, like, there's lines in here, like basically all of society is Gamora's season ending. And, you know, what's the line that always cracks me up? It's the, change must be forced. Like, you're all going to be straight edge, or you will all perish in the lunacy once it befalls.
And then they went on tour in a bus with Madball.
Like, yeah, nope, exactly.
I'm forcing it.
Yeah. But there are some lines in here that, you know, give me that titanium backbone, not to mention the ending repetition of, I am straight edge. Because in 1996, you know your boy was sailing the seven seas with the fattest X's on his hands, just living this boombox lifestyle. like, this was important to me at the time, especially this song has held with me ever since. And I think it is the gem on this LP that is not their best material.
I love this song. It was on a sampler, and I absolutely loved it. In fact,
is it on Victory Style 2?
Was it? It might have been. It might have been, or one of those like just dollar or $3 like label samplers. I can't remember, but it was like singled out. And I'm a pretty big Earth Crisis poser. I love Firestorm, and I love this song. You know, and I listened to the first LP. I've listened to it a few times, and never clicked with me. And I'm still waiting for it too. I think, you know, one day Destroy the Machines and the Husker Du catalog will be my favorite stuff ever, but it just hasn't happened yet. This song though is so good. Like, his vocals are so perfectly shredded. I love it. And I think that you guys have discussed before that you kind of think his voice went too far on this, but I think it's so good. And this song has so much like weird melody where it's like, I guess it's melodic metal, but I hate melodic metal, you know. And but the parts of this like song that stand out are the melodies, right? Like the
I would say that it has like minor key melodies, you know, like they're like almost sad or darker melodies. And it is the first song on Victory Style 2.
Yeah, so yeah, you're right. It is like the minor key stuff. And also, like, this song doesn't really have a chorus, but that part it goes to after the verse, like the dun 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 dun, and then it goes to like a weird melodic thing there too.
It's, yeah, that dun 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 part, it's melodramatic music for how melodramatic the lyrics get right there too. It's fucking awesome. I mean, Earth Crisis is the kind of band that made you feel like being straight edge was the ability to stand on the battlefield and wipe out all the fucking smokers at Soma that like were ruining shows where you went home and your clothes just reeked the next day. You know?
Right. It's like a soundtrack to put on your cape.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's so ill for that reason. And yeah, this song kicks ass. Ben, how do you think about this one?
I think the end where he says, "Oh, I am straight edge," like totally saves it. Like up to that point, like it's just like, yep, Earth Crisis sucks now. And then it's like, oh yeah, straight edge sing-along, fuck yeah. But like Carl's at this point is really marble mouthed. Like if you listen to him on Firestorm, you can make everything out. And it sounds like a hardcore singer singing over metallic music. Here it's like a metal singer singing over metal music. And it's just like, this is like my least favorite lane up for hardcore in the 90s. And like, hell yeah, I sang along when they did the I Am Straight Edge part, because I was so down for Straight Edge. I was like, I'll sing along to this band I can't stand just because it's, you know, fuck yeah, Straight Edge. But yeah, I do not like this kind of music.
I want to say in defense of both Carl and Roger, not that they need my defending because like they're two all-time greats, but I think that, you know, early in their career, they're just like going for it. And then when they start playing like a ton of shows later, as a singer, you have to like find your voice that might not be like your A-grade perfect thing. Like unless you're Vogel and you're just like some freak of nature that can belt it every night. You know what I mean? Like what the fuck is going on there? You know, like, but anyway, I think that people that tour and they have to do it every night, they need to find like a sustainable voice that's going to be consistent. And I think that is kind of like what Roger went for. And then also I think that here, you know, where his voice sounds more shredded here, it's easier to do than what he's doing on Firestorm. Like Firestorm, he's belting as hard as he can, like from the gut. And this is like a little more like throat. Like you can just get through it. Like just have a cup of tea after, you know, that's what I'm thinking on this. So in the defense of two of the goats, that's what I think. Clevo, what do you think on this?
So, you know, this, when we talk about metalcore, you know, like what metal are we basing, you know, metalcore off of when we think of what metalcore is? And I would almost say that this could be new metalcore. I totally forgot that this is the I Am Straight Edge song when I was listening to it again. The beginning of it, like with the tribal drums and there's the bass and everything seems layered, it just sounds like a song that was like manufactured in the studio almost. It's just like the way the stuff's layered on top of each other. And like Ben said, you know, this is not necessarily my cup of tea when it comes to metalcore. And I too also probably jumped off of rafters to sing I Am Straight Edge when that part came on. Like, you know, it's just like they definitely knew what they were doing with that, with adding that as the end of this song. But yeah, this is the album where Earth Crisis lost me, like musically.
All right, Dan, let's go on to your next one and let's get back in the pit.
All right. The next one I am going to go with Cockney Rejects, The Power and the Glory, the title track off of The Power and the Glory. Now, this is where the Cockney Rejects start to completely betray our eardrums and start to piss in our ear holes. But this song makes it out alive where the rest of the album doesn't. This song makes it out alive because 65% of the song is all sung in group oi backups, and it sounds so great. It sounds amazing. And it's a, you know, a song about going off to World War II and stuff like that. It's got themes that also tickle my fancy. Whereas the rest of the album, they're starting to, you know, have that production and they're starting to believe that they're real musicians and all of that. And then the next album after this, holy shit. And emphasis on the shit. But this song's really great. It's the one that there's a reason I still have the LP on vinyl, and it's because of this song in particular. The rest of it, you can maybe pick one other good one out on this LP, but for the most part, this is the only one really worth checking out. On the Run is decent, but it's still got some really bad 1981 production of the time that makes it just really bad. And I bet you, like, there's a bunch of West Ham fans out there that just like this just because of the cover with the with the crossed anvils, but crossed hammers, I mean, not anvils. Across the anvil. Yeah, what did you all think of this song?
For the power and the glory, you went to war and fought for your country. Oh, wrong one. No, this song.
Who sings that? That sounds interesting.
Stars and Stripes. Come on. Shout out Choke. But dude, this song rules. I saw when you chose it because we all shared beforehand, so we listened to these songs. and you put it through, and I was like, good God, man, 3.5 minutes of a late Cockney Reject song. I'm going to kill myself.
It's not that late.
How late is it?
It's only 1981, but they do a lot of awful stuff after this.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do a lot of awful stuff after this.
Okay. I just assumed it was late because it was for this exercise. Dude, this song is awesome. It is so good. It's like a perfect Oi song. I was blown away. I can't believe how good the song is. I wouldn't change a fucking thing. If it was 2 minutes and 45 seconds, I would start a riot. Like, I want this song to be this long. I wouldn't lose a second. It is perfect. Ben, what do you think?
One interesting thing about those hammers on the front of the record, this is where Judge stole their logo. So that's a fun fact. But this song is great, and it is an Oi version of the song Pretty in Pink by the Psychedelic Furs. Straight up, that's what it is. And actually, I looked up to see what came first. They both came out in 1981, so I don't know what did come first. and also, when I listened to this song and the two albums that came before it, I think a lot about the Great Rock and Roll Swindle soundtrack, the Sex Pistols soundtrack. And that has a different vibe than the Sex Pistols Nevermind the Bollocks album. And I really hear a lot of that Great Rock and Roll Swindle shit in Cockney Rejects. So check for that. But I wonder, is this the first example of a punk band going cock rock? Like, who tried to do this kind of thing before the Cockney Rejects? I can't think of anyone.
I think that's a really good shout. I mean, it's always been, I can't remember what his name was, but there was an older punk dude I knew back in Warrington, and he would reference the utter betrayal of going to see Cockney Rejects and then wearing basketball shorts and high top sneakers and stuff. And he was just like, this is an absolute betrayal.
Oh, I love it. Clevo, what do you think about this?
So yeah, thanks Ben for snaking me on the Judge shout out there. But yeah, I mean, you look at the cover, you definitely see that. And also for snaking me on bringing up cock rock, because my notes here are A, it's so long. B, it has cock rock vocals. You know, the gang Oi backup vocals save it. It was just so damn long. I don't know if I just don't have the attention span anymore, but this song is really long.
You guys are crazy. The song is perfect.
Well, and also, Judge stole the hammers, but did Can I Say steal that flame? I mean, did Dag Nasty steal that flame?
The flaming head.
How do you do, fellow kids?
What?
How do you do, fellow kids?
What?
How do you do, fellow kids?
All right, I wanted to talk two LPs that came out relatively recently. The first one that I wanted to talk was the Chemical Fix LP, Our Shade Casts Far. Came out on Safe Inside Records in the year 2021. And this album is a rager. Dan, what do you think about it?
Well, it's interesting because American Nightmare's spiritual home, other than Mass, like other than Boston, was Philly. You know, they had such a brotherhood with Philadelphia, and this is a Philly band that really channels American Nightmare, I feel. It's very early aughts hardcore in general, but especially dripping with AN influence. It's really cool. And their Shade Casts Very Far, that sounds like a total drag queen, you know, throwing shade. It's a ripper. It's fast paced. It's everything you want from hardcore, you know. I want to spend more time with it to really dig into the tracks over and over again, you know, and I'm looking forward to listening to it a lot more. I, you know, gave it its first few listens in the build up to doing this, and I was just, you know, taken back to a time where I was extremely active in hardcore, and it it gave me total like great, amazing, urgent vibes of a time that rules, and they're a band that rules. Awesome that Safe Inside is putting it out, because great label, great band.
The album cover looks like it's straight out of 97, though, right?
Yeah.
No one has it up.
No, I have it. Yeah. Yeah. I can Cleaver, see that.
What year is that album cover?
I mean, it's definitely like their American Nightmare influence goes all the way to, that could be any record that Jake Bannon designed from anywhere from like 98 to 2002. I feel like if you wrote Count Me Out instead of Chemical Fix, that could be a Count Me Out record.
Definitely. Also, it could easily be a Texas Is the Reason. You know, it could go that way as well, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what...
I get that. You know, it's like the all lowercase, the image only takes up half of the screen. Like, that could also be a Promise Ring cover.
Yeah, definitely. But the tape on it makes it very Jake Bannon and exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I like the tape. Clevo, how do you feel about this musically?
I would have probably lost my shit for this in 2001, but also probably would have labeled it what we called Amazing Core, because I don't know if anyone was on the mullet board back then. A lot of bands got called Amazing after American Nightmare came out, and bands that kind of went down that route. I get actually a bit of a Cave In Until Your Heart Stops vibe off of this as well. Vocally, especially when there's the two vocalists in there, kind of actually more Crossbearer era than Until Your Heart Stops, but I get that Cave In American Nightmare vibe off of it. It's you know, I don't know if there's a lot of bands that sound like this now, but you know, definitely in 2001 I would have probably gone crazy for it, but then also would it have stood out in 2001?
Ben, how do you feel about this?
I definitely do not hear Amazing Core. I think Amazing Core is more like melodic hardcore influenced by Bane and Ignite, like more like bands like With Honor. I think this is something I would have called B9 Core. You know, like if this isn't on Bridge 9, then that's what it's going for. Although there are breakdowns you hear on this that you would never hear on an American Nightmare song. Like it's not... They're not a carbon copy of a specific band, but they definitely harken back to a specific era and label and region. Man, the singer is pissed off. Woo! But he doesn't do the thing that kind of was annoying with American Nightmare, where they would layer vocals. He'd start one line before the last line ended. Like, he doesn't do that on this, which is cool. It's like just really hardcore. Like, I don't think there are any standout tracks, but I do appreciate the fact that it ends at 9 songs. I think like it's really hard to take music this intense in large doses, and I'm not like saying I'm like I'm a wimp, I can't take hardcore music in large doses. It just works better when records are like an EP and it just hits you hard and then runs, you know? And this is like right on the line between, you know, like if it was one more song, I'd be like, all right, enough already. But yeah, this is a pretty good record.
I pretty much echo everything that Ben said. Clevo, I always thought that like Amazing Core also was kind of how Ben described it. Like kind of, I guess like the rivalry records bands, like the ones that were kind of doing like the melodic hardcore in the early 2000s, like all that stuff.
Well, I'd say that Clevo's right. The fact that everyone in Boston said Amazing for everything, and the mullet board was full of everyone saying Amazing. So I think the genus of the term or the start of it is where Clevo's saying, but I think the general idea of what Amazing Core is like Swan Song by Bane. You know, that is the ultimate Amazing Core song, you know. Or Modern Life is War kind of is Amazing Core. You know, lots of crescendos, lots of build-ups, lots of drama.
Stretch Armstrong, Reach the Sky.
Do you know what, though? I don't want it to come off like we're just saying this band sounds like AN, the end. Like, it sounds like lots of early 2000s hardcore that was blazing straight ahead.
Yeah.
Stuff like this. And, you know, your Breaker Breakers or your Allegiance also, you know, things like that, that really cool, fast pissed, but not pissed in, I'd say very pissed in a hardcore sense, not necessarily referencing punk being pissed as much. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I chose this record because it kicks ass, right? Yeah. First off. And, you know, I like to keep this podcast positive because I don't know. I guess I don't see the point in serving up stuff to shit on, you know? So basically the stuff we talk on the podcast is stuff we love mostly, you know, unless I'm trying to punish Ben by listening to 90s like tough guy stuff. But anyway, like, I want to say something about this and I mean it in the most positive way. So I hope no one takes it the wrong way. I think this record is awesome in the way it's super intense. It's super pissed. They hit on a million different tempos, like in a small hardcore palette. The vocals sound great. I can't say anything bad about them. Like, I can't say anything bad about anything on here. It's just like I put it on and it sounds rad, but nothing grabs me. And so then I'm kind of like in this strange place, right? It's like you put on something, it's like a nice blast of rad stuff where I can't pick anything apart about it. Like, the production's great, the songwriting is creative, the vocals are good, the drumming's good, everything's good. And nothing grabs me, which is strange. It's a weird thing because I try to think of like early like hardcore blasts, and there's still like, you still get like standout tracks, right? When we're talking about the Antidote record and we're like, okay, this is like raging hardcore, a bunch of songs, but there's still like tentpole tracks. And like, you're like, okay, what's the worst song on the Antidote record? That song alone would still like kick ass if you heard it on a comp. Like, this record is kind of like all those Antidote songs that are awesome and they would kick ass on a comp, but like in an LP, just nothing is super grabbing me. And it started to make me think that maybe, you know, we've talked about, at least Daniel and I think we have a consensus, the last few years of hardcore have actually been like the best years of hardcore because there's so many good lanes. All the bands have like upped like their ability to like the fullest. And now like the production is caught up with everything too. Like, bands don't have those bad recordings where you're listening to stuff and it's like, this is great in spite of a bad recording, or this is great in spite of something. Like, everything is caught up. And so I just wonder if this is like kind of the baseline of, okay, this is like what hardcore is now. Like, this Chemical Fix LP is super rad. It's a great record. And like, if you don't put out something as good as this, like, your band kind of sucks. Right?
You know what, though? I think how hardcore goes in cycles and different eras are being referenced and bands are, you know, kind of building a sound over an influence. This band might be a couple years ahead of when this is going to hit really big again.
That might be true, but I don't get the throwback vibes off this you guys are getting. Like, this just sounds like modern hardcore to me.
Really? When I was listening to it today at work, I was like getting the vibes of this could have been a band my band played with on tour somewhere and just sit listening and going, holy shit, this band rips. You know, just kind of discovering them that night because I totally heard that sound. I totally heard the sound of like when we were doing this often.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I didn't like a ton of that stuff. Like, I didn't think that the Breaker 7-inch was good, you know? But I think this is good, and I don't know. I mean, I guess I have to listen to Breaker again. Maybe I'm totally wrong, you know? Like, maybe that does kick ass. Maybe I was just a fucking hater. Who knows? Like, that's a good possibility. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
You're definitely a lot more positive now than you were then.
I think... The dominant hardcore sound now is more like down-tuned, moshy, a little slower than this, a little more like New York gruff vocals than that just all out yelling, pissed off vocals. Like this, this doesn't strike me as being as kind of keeping up with the Joneses or blending in with current hardcore. Although it's not, you know, it's not a throwback to 1977. Like, you know, it doesn't stand out incredibly as being retro, but yeah, I'd say it has 20-year-old vibes.
But it's definitely not passé.
Yeah, that's cool. I appreciate the conversation because that gives me a new perspective to look at this with, you know. Anyway, all right, Chemical Fix, Our Shade Casts Far on Safe Inside Records. Get that shit because it kicks ass. And shade of it all. Dude, and it's a single-sided LP, so you know you want that. You don't got to flip it. Be a lazy ass and like just rage in your living room. All right, let's go on to the next one. The next one is the Bootlicker LP. It's self-titled. It came out this year, and it came out on, well, depending on, I guess it came out in the UK on Static Shock Records, and it came out in Canada on Neon Taste Records. And if you're in America, I guess it depends on what record store you buy it from. Dan, how do you feel about this one?
This has a lot of songs, but you know what? This LP, and especially listening to it on Spotify because I don't have it on vinyl, unfortunately, I think it gets better and better as the record goes on, which is not usually the case with things, you know? I think it's interesting calling yourselves Bootlicker. That was something that's been kind of like going on in my mind while listening to this, you know? But the songs that I really, really fucking loved were State of Fear, The Cold, and Submission Part 2, which are right in the second half of the record. So fucking good. Now, sound-wise, this band had me scratching my head of like, because, you know, we always like to liken something to try and understand it and to also maybe let people who may not have heard this have a little kind of window into what they sound like. And to me, there was like an element of Negative Approach, an element of like JFA, an element of Infest, but without the power violence drumming, with a lot more like traditional punk and hardcore drumming, kind of all that wrapped into one. And the great thing is that the guitars are, you know, they're distorted, but they're not downtuned. They're not like mass distortion on them. So it makes it sound like really hard, but also really, I don't know, traditional for lack of a better word, like very true to punk and hardcore without it being true to trying to sound heavy and mean. The meanness comes from the vocals a lot more than anything else. Like the vocals are really cool and mean. But yeah, that's, I mean, maybe a little bit Slapshot in there as well. I don't know. It had me really enjoying it, but also really trying to, you know, come to terms with what it was, other than it just being great, fucking straight ahead, like fast hardcore.
Yeah, you kind of nailed it there. Like, this album is baffling listening to it, and it's why I love it. It is so weird sonically in like such a straightforward band. So, like, the guitar actually has like no distortion. It's like wild. It's like a clean channel guitar, and then the bass is like fuzzed out to the max.
Okay, so that's what I was probably hearing, but also I feel like the guitar is limiting just a little bit, so it's kind of getting some crackle. But yeah, I mean on the some of the parts it almost sounds like this, I don't want this to even influence anybody's mind, but has almost like a country twang occasionally to well, that's some
because,
of the riffs.
Yeah, because the guitar has no distortion.
Yeah.
It's wild. And that's what I'm saying. Like, this is so confusing, and it's so rad because they're going in with this weird ass idea of what they want their sound to be, and no one stepped in to like stifle them, which is so ill, right? Like no one was like, oh, maybe it would sound better. Like, let's put a little distortion on the guitar so the guitar and bass blend together. Like, no, they're just like these two weird opposite objects, like just smashing your ears. It's so strange. And then, you know, the singing is brutal. The drumming is great. I don't know how to describe the music. Like, it's like they're doing like D beat street punk.
Yeah.
You know, like it's weird. I guess like the up-tempo Slapshot songs, I guess would be it. Yeah. I don't know. Clevo, how do you take this one?
So I fucking loved it. That clean guitar is so jarring when you first hear it. And I was like, when I first put it on, I was like, I don't know. But then as like Zach said, as Dan said, as it goes on, it just works. You know, when we were talking about Chemical Fix and you're talking about that big production, if this had clean production, it wouldn't work. Like this is a hardcore punk record with, you know, like dirty production, this jarring, like it's almost abrasive, that guitar, like, which is so funny that it's not distorted, but it's almost abrasive against the music. It does have that street punk or Oi vibe. This is a punk record. You know, like when we talk about hardcore and we talk about punk, you know, like this is a hardcore punk record. Conscription, the lead off track, I thought was really good. Modern Science, that starts with that clean guitar. You know, I was really feeling the clean guitar by the time that fourth or fifth song comes around. And yeah, State of Fever is another song. But those as we get into the second side of the songs, you know, just kind of go into one another. And it's like, I listened to this probably five or six times since we talked about we were going to listen to it on the pod. And I tracked down a copy of the LP. So yeah, nice. It's a keeper.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, this rules.
Go.
Well, I was just saying the only thing that I was like begging for was like a mid-tempo banger like earlier in the record.
You get
it later in the record, and I think that like Dan is right that maybe side B is actually stronger just because like there's a little more mix in tempo, but this thing bangs all the way through. Sorry, Dan, go ahead.
I was gonna say there's. A lot of the riffs give you that street punk oi, or oi first and street punk, you know, like copies oi kind of vibe. But it also, to me, was pulling up some like West Coast skate punky like rhythms, like ba-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, you know, that kind of thing as well. So that's why I said JFA a bit in my attempt to kind of pinpoint a sound for it, because it, a lot of those riffs that would have been sang differently by a skate punkish band were kind of there for me a bit. But God, it's great.
Yeah, everyone, if you haven't heard it, like check the songs on the playlist, because I think we're kind of doing it a disservice by explaining it as like street punk or oi, because it, like, that's just because we're stupid, right? Like we can't explain what it sounds like because they're doing like the D beat most of the record. Right. So it's like it's giving you that vibe, but like musically it's not that. Like maybe it's just honed in with the vocals a little bit, but they're not singy. They're not like anthemic. Like, I don't know. I don't know what this record is, but for some reason, just sonically, I love it. Ben, what do you think about it?
The guitar. Well, my first note is that the guitar has very little distortion on it, and it does have distortion on it. I think what you're hearing is that it's a guitar with single coil pickups. So when Dan said that country twang, like that's it. Like the 99% of hardcore bands play with humbuckers, which is like two coil pickups. And so, you know, when someone's playing through like an old Strat or she's using a Hagstrom, I just looked up the photo of like a Hagstrom with P90s. So it's like you get that old timey sound. But then also what happens is the guitar has very little distortion on it, but the entire recording is distorted. So you have this really lo-fi, everything in the red recording. And that style of production, I'm not really a fan of. Like, you know, if a record was made in 1980 that happened to be recorded lo-fi because that's all they had access to. There's a charm that goes with that. And when it's very clearly a deliberate production choice in the year 2021, it doesn't exactly sound the same. You know, like Zach always says, the fifth member of an early 80s punk band is the production. Or what's the term you use, Zach? Is that
I think that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, and I think like that fifth member is gone forever and there's no getting that fifth member back. So it's like, you know, make do with what you have. And so the whole album sounds like there's a layer of TV static underneath it. Like it's like going on underneath all these.
I don't think that's the production. I think that's the bass is like super distorted. And so they're going for a weird contrast between the clean guitar and that weirdo bass.
Right. It's possible.
I think it is. That's what I think it is. Yeah. So like while they're not going for like a clean recording, I don't think that they're trying to make it lo-fi. I think they're just trying to capture that wild fucking sound. And they actually harness it really well. But I could be wrong. This just sounds right to me. And I'm glad you brought that up because I think that this album is like the thing I've heard, you know, in the last handful of years where like the recording and like the sonic output of the band like is harnessing like that fifth member element that I've talked about for like that early 80s sound. Like the way this band sounds, I guess we could use something like a Dillinger 4 as well, right? Like they sound so weird with like the bass so high in the mix. Like you listen to that stuff and you're like, whoa, this is like weird and abrasive, but like it works for a band like that. You know, like they're kind of a band where the sound is another member as well. How do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I'm not a huge fan of really, really dirty recording. Like I'm somewhere in the middle, I would say. You know, if it's too clean, yeah. And this would be on the really, really dirty side of the spectrum. And going back to the D-beat thing, like I thought they sort of reminded me of Discharge, but not enough to be considered a D-beat band. And then I go to their Discogs page, like right now, while we're on this, while we're doing the pod, and it's all profile D-beat hardcore band from British Columbia, Canada. It's like, oh, I guess they are D-beat enough to be considered a D-beat band.
Yeah, but they probably haven't labeled themselves like.
No, like it's true.
Crowdsourced thing. But here's the thing. Everything on this recording is deliberate. Like,
yeah, I think so.
None of it's like, oh, you know, there's a crackle or a mistake. Like, this production is deliberate. They want to sound just like this, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a success, right?
Yes.
For any band that like goes into the studio and walks out with something like, that they went in, oh, we want to sound like this, and you walk out and it sounds like that. Like, that's amazing. Sorry, Ben.
Oh yeah, and I was going to say that if you listen to this album on Spotify, they do this cool thing where instead of having like a 5-second video that is on a continuous loop, like a lot of bands do, they just have static art with lyrics for each song. So it's like you're reading along with the lyric sheet. As if, like we all did in the pre-digital era, so I thought that was neat, and I think like more bands should do that. And I'm like, why hasn't anyone else thought of that yet? And they definitely are not a Discharge clone. Like no, there are a lot of different things going on here.
Yeah, and, UK 82.
Yeah,
but without the distortion, it's just great.
Yeah, they're playing the D beat, but it's not a D beat. Band, I wouldn't say.
Yeah, I think right. I think calling them a DB band is doing them a disservice.
Yeah.
Almost like, you know, you can say, like I said earlier when we were talking about the Cro-Mags, like the Cro-Mags have like a heavy Discharge influence. They're not a DB band, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, that's totally fair. And remember your that Spotify lyric thing for when we do our discussion on lyrics on a soon episode. Because all right. That's one of my gripes. So one of my gripes in modern hardcore is like the lyrics aren't really accessible, right? Because we live in a digital era. People put stuff out on Spotify and the physical format is like less important now than ever, you know? So like as someone that cares about lyrics like myself, as well as writing lyrics, it's like frustrating that people aren't always going to pick up on that element of your band. So that's really cool. These, these people put the effort out to have the lyrics be forefront.
I think it's super rad. I feel like bands that have Bandcamps, they have the option of putting their lyrics on there, and tons of them don't. And anyway, we could save that for the lyric discussion.
Yeah, we'll save it for lyric discussion. I'll just say that I don't. A lot of they might not know you can, right? Because ours were added after the release date because we found out that we could, right? Yeah. So there's that. All right, let's roll on. All right, one's got to go. We're doing that sweet section of Bad Religion from 1988 to 1992. One's got to go. Suffer, 1988. No Control, 1989. Against the Grain, 1990. And Generator, 1992. And we're going to send it to Dan first for the hot take.
Well, it just comes down to sentimentality. Really, for me, Jesus Christ. Sorry, my phone alarm is going off. I'm going to say Generator for me is really sentimental. It came at a time where I was just absolutely diving headfirst into the poppier side of punk. And it had just come out, and you know, that was the one for me. Like, so maybe if I was comparing them all with a broader, like, unemotional thing, that, yeah, perhaps some of the songwriting doesn't hold up to the others. But for me, I have to keep Generator first and foremost, and Suffer, because it is incredible and is basically ground zero for this sound. You know, Suffer is the evolution of Bad Religion becoming Bad Religion as we would really know them from then on. And I think Against the Grain has some of the, you know, greatest Bad Religion songs there are. So No Control has got to go.
Yeah. Yeah, this is so interesting because I actually listened to them in order, and Suffer is my punk rock entry point. And so I hear it, I fall in love with it, and then I'm like, okay, No Control's the next one. And you get it, and you're like, oh my God, they did it again. And then Get Against the Grain, it's like, oh my God, they did it again. You know, and then Generator, you get it, and it's like, this sounds different. Like, the production's totally different. The drumming is totally different, but the songs are so good on it that it carries it. And even though the sound has changed, there's lots of songs that are the same, and some that I think are Apex Bad Religion songs. In fact, I think that the last three songs on Generator are the best last three songs on any Bad Religion album. But you can't fuck with Suffer, No Control, and Against the Grain. It's the ultimate trifecta. Generator's gotta go. Clevo, what do you think?
This was difficult for me. I mean, I'm sure it was difficult for everyone. Suffer, hands down, is Hall of Famer. Gotta stay. Yeah. You know, just like when I think of Bad Religion, I think of Suffer. I have to say I might be in the minority, because I made a playlist of just these four albums and put them in an order, and was listening to them in order a lot the past couple of days. I feel like after Suffer, No Control, I don't know if it's the production or Greg's vocals in the mix, but I feel like No Control is not as urgent, or is just not, the energy isn't there on No Control, but No Control has some hits. I prefer Against the Grain. I think the energy and the urgency comes back on Against the Grain. And then Generator's a weird record, because I feel like Generator is that bridge to the major label. It's that bridge to Recipe for Hate. You know, like, because I feel like Recipe for Hate just becomes more, a little bit more melodic. That being said, I know it's not on this exercise either, but Stranger Than Fiction might be my second favorite Bad Religion album, which is totally going to blow our minds. I'm keeping Suffering Against the Grain. Then it comes down to No Control and Generator. I think it's weird, Zach, that you think that what's the last song on Generator, the FCC song? That I think that one just stands out to me as so weird. I might send No Control down because I think sonically it doesn't seem to have the energy that the other three do.
That's wild. You think No Control has less energy than Generator? Because I think that the energy is sucked out of Generator, but the songwriting just holds it there.
I don't know if it's the energy or the production, because the production on Generator is so much bigger.
Right. It's completely different. You're really comparing like those three, the Suffer, No Control, and Against the Grain. And I do agree that No Control will be the weakest of those three, but it's like, okay, so what? It's like an 8.5, like, or a 9, you know, because like Suffer's a 10, Against the Grain's like a 9.5. It's like, I don't know. It's brutal.
But No Control has, you know, the song No Control, I Want to Conquer the World, and I Want Something More. Like it has the hits. This was harder than I thought it would be.
Yeah, so good. Ben, what's your take?
This one was really easy for me. And I actually asked Zach if he could sub out Generator for How Could Hell Be Any Worse to make it more even, to even the playing field out, so you could have actually the first four Bad Religion albums against each other. But
because you argue that Into the Unknown counts, so it wouldn't be the first
one. You're right. Good point. how could the biggest fan of Into the Unknown forget about Into the Unknown? But it happened. But Generator, to me, is the one that's got to go, which is sort of ironic because it's the first one I purchased on cassette when it came out, although my best friend had How Could Hell Be Any Worse and Against the Grain before that. So I was very, very familiar with those songs before Generator came out. Generator has great songs. Heaven Is Falling is one of the best Bad Religion songs ever written.
That's my favorite Bad Religion song.
That was my favorite Bad Religion song throughout the 90s. I don't know if I have a favorite one anymore. But the production becomes too slick on Generator, and they never really come back from that. And a lot of people say Against the Grain is where it gets too slick. But I think that huh?
What?
Yeah, I've heard that from people older than me, which feeds into the theory I'm about to drop, which is that Bad Religion, that most people lose interest in Bad Religion around the time they turn 18. So you ask someone, what's the last good Bad Religion album? And then you can guess their age within a year. I've done that many times. And, there are exceptions to the rule, because I know people who like every Bad Religion album, but those are, you know, those exceptions are few and far between. I love Against the Grain and No Control. I like No Control and Against the Grain more than I like Suffer. Suffer has the best cover art. That's one of the best punk record covers ever made. I mean, who doesn't feel like that kid on fire in the, you know, in that generic ass California neighborhood? But man, No Control. Fuck, dude, 15 songs, just one after another, Automatic Man, I Want to Conquer the World, I Want Something More. Billy is a great song about heroin addiction. So many good lines. Against the Grain is just as big as that. It's as big as Bad Religion's ever going to be able to sound without sounding overproduced. And Against the Grain's got, you know, Anesthesia with the big drums at the end. It's like, it's teetering on overproduction, but it's totally works.
I love that song as well.
Oh, Anesthesia. Dude. Anesthesia is the song on Against the Grain.
But yeah, for real. Modern Man and Anesthesia, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, Modern Man, Turn on the Light, Get Off, Blender Head, just 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, it's so fucking good.
I prefer, and it's still good. Get Off.
Yeah, Get Off is so good.
I just want to make sure that we mention the lyric sheet on Suffer, because holy shit, that is like one of the best visual images on a record, I think, ever. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, they just drew the lyrics on a wall
and took
a photograph of the wall.
I just, it's so fucking good with the leather jacket hanging on the doorknob and the guitar. It's just like, it's fucking perfect.
It's great. Art
direction.
I also want to say that the bridge on Anxiety off of No Control is one of my favorite Bad Religion moments. The quest for truth, the quest for gold, and end up all the same. And the way it goes back to the chorus, it's like, oh my God. This is impossible. Now, if I had chosen How Could Hell Be Any Worse instead of Generator, Ben, would that have changed? Like, you would have lost that still, right?
Well, then no. I wouldn't have been able to pick off Generator, because that wouldn't have been in contention. No, I think I would have
lost Generator, but in that scenario, would you have lost How Could Hell Be Any Worse?
No, I would have gotten rid of Suffer.
Oh, you're a psychopath, Cleveland.
No, dude. Suffer's amazing.
Okay. Clevo.
It would have been closer. My point is it would have been much, much, much closer and much harder. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Clevo, do you think of those four as a better matchup than including Generator?
No.
The four we picked, I think, are the matchup just because of the that time period.
Sonically, these four are closer than How Could Hell Be in there. You know, that's sonically a different sounding band to an extent. You know, it's much more of its time. Whereas Suffer, they create this blueprint and then they keep going, right?
Yeah, although Generator sounds as different as the other three. Like, How Could Hell Be Any Worse and Generator both sound completely different from like those three in that magic middle zone.
Generator is right there with Against the Grain to me.
Well, no, Generator is so produced. It's insane. Like, it's just a song that carries it.
But beyond it being more produced, you have a different drummer and you have songs like Generator that have that weird, like, you know, I guess it would be like a post-chorus, like dom 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 dom, dee do do dee dee dee. Like, you never get that on any Bad Religion records before that. And you have Atomic Garden, which is the songwriting style actually changes a little bit on Generator.
But for me, when I had, you know, I originally had this on CD before anything else, and Heaven Is Falling and Automatic Garden back to back. Listen to the two songs, then skip back to start of Heaven Is Falling, then skip back, like, after Atomic Garden, skip back. That was my move. Like, I just listened to those two songs incessantly, and that they were back to back on there. So, I don't know. That's why it doesn't get the boot for me, because that was like months and years of, well, months and maybe a couple years of listening to this LP en masse. Even though I was listening to everything else at the time, I just, you know, I love Melody, and Heaven Is Fallen is just, it's a hit.
Yeah, it's a hit, but like, it's also the first album that like has songs that I hate on it. You know, like, I kind of hate 21st Century Digital Boy. In fact, I mean, I do.
I'm saying
in spite of, so that might be the first song that I hate. But like Generator, Two Babies in the Dark, get out of here. Atomic Garden, I don't like it either.
I like it.
No Direction, could do without it. Like, there's, like, it's the first CD of Skips. It's like high highs and low lows. Those three Bad Religions are like, just crank it the whole way through. You know?
Agree.
You know, actually, but this is funny on the other side of that argument. I don't think I like any slow Bad Religion songs until The Answer, which is on Generator.
You know, The Answer, I feel like, again, on Stranger Than Fiction, what's the single that was off of Stranger Than Fiction?
Infected.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like The Answer kind of sets up, it's very similar to that.
Yeah, except the answer has like better singing. Like he hits like that note. I gotta be had the answer. It's like good. Infected is like, I don't know. There's just a little too much like Eddie Vedder. Like he lent Greg his flannel, and it's like this dude.
Well, it was the time, you know.
No, I know. It's very of the time. Like I don't like Stranger Than Fiction at all, except for like a few songs. And so like that's rad to me that Cleveland. That Clevo loves that record.
Well, I say Daniel. But when was the last time you listened to it?
I will do it again tomorrow.
Because like been years. I listened to it again. I kept listening to the four records over and over, and I was like, I need a palate cleanser. So I listened to another Bad Religion record, and then I listened to Stranger in Fiction again, and I fucking love that record. Like. Again, I think it might be my second favorite Bad Religion record. And I know that that's crazy, and I don't care.
I remember
there's several things. Like, I don't like alternative music at all, and I should love this record. It's the first one that I got. Like, it's the one that I got like after I was into punk, right? So it's like the first album that came out, and I was able to buy it when it was new. And I don't know. I still know the song. I love that song, Better Off Dead, off that record. You know, but other than that, I don't know. And then when The Gray Race came out, it like grabbed me more than Stranger Than Fiction. I was like, okay, this sounds like a little more like Bad Religion. Although now when I listen to that album, I'm like, oh, there's like three good songs on it.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like zero good songs on it.
I haven't listened to Stranger Than Fiction in a million years, but in my head, I remember really liking the song featuring Tim Armstrong. And yeah. I remember really not liking the song featuring Pennywise Dude.
Television.
There's also a song that rips off the Bad Brains. I can't remember which one it is, but it's totally a Bad Brains riff on Stranger Than Fiction.
And in going into this One's Gotta Go, I didn't listen to any of them in the build-up to this because I wanted to go off of what speaks to me in my memory. Now, if I probably listened to all four records like today and then went into it, maybe my answer would have been different, but I wanted to go into it like just the way Bad Religion has seeped into me over many years listening to them, what my One's Gotta Go is, and that's why Generator stays.
And Daniel just outlined everything that's wrong with America. The way I think is right, and I won't take any new information.
Yep, sounds just like me. No, it's just more of the fact that you put this on there because you know I have a soft spot for this record. So I didn't want to ruin my soft spot for the record by actually re-engaging with it and go, oh, yeah, maybe I don't love my childhood anymore and I need to see a psychotherapist, etc.
Book learning? Yeah. What?
Yeah. Oh, Fertile Crescent isn't that good.
What? Fertile Crescent is one of the greatest songs, and so is Cease off The Gray Race. So what's up? All right. This was awesome. Thanks, guys. You did a great job. Any final thoughts, Ben?
Final thoughts? It looks like No Control and Generator are tied 2-2. For worst record out of these four. So the real winners are Suffering Against the Grain.
Yeah.
Oh, and they are the winners. Dan, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Welcome Brian Baker.
And Cleveland, final thoughts?
Yeah, let's end on a positive note. Let's think about the keepers and not what we're getting rid of.
Yeah.
Oh, so posy.
This is so magic. Like, this four album stretch is, I mean, we should talk about this another time as well, but I think it's probably the best four album stretch in the history of punk. You know, maybe Poison Idea touches it, but different lane, but I don't know. We'll talk about that another time. All right, everyone. Thanks. Go to the website, 185milessouth.com. Click that playlist link and smash that Patreon button.